You're smart enough to figure out that, well, relationships aren't easy. You and your partner may have some preconceived notions of what role each other needs to play, especially when it comes to money. And I also don't need to tell you that when you don't work out some of these negative beliefs or assumptions, your bank account is going to go to the crapper.
I was up there in Canada receiving these awards for this project that I had created, and I had $35 on my account, and a bad check went through, and that took the $35. And so I had nothing. Like, I was up there in Canada for 5 days and I had no money whatsoever. And then Brianne called me to say, hey, our water shut off. And then an hour later, did you not pay the rent? There was like three things that all happened in one moment in time.
It's a great time.
Do I really need to look at this? And yes, the answer was yes, I did.
That's Mark and Brianne. Gosh, where do I start? For one, Brianne is a recovering love addict. And one of her beliefs was that her prince will come and take care of her to the point where she's okay with hoarding her money instead of spending it. Mark, well, he happily took on this caretaking role, even in the midst of his spending addiction, and, well, look where it landed them. With so much baggage amongst themselves, how do they finally get over their individual addictions and come together as a team to make sure their son doesn't suffer the same fate? Welcome to Beyond the Dollar with me, Sarah Lee Kane, a show where we have deep and honest conversations about how money affects our well-being. Mark Gant and Brianne Davis Gant, producer and host of the Secret Life podcast, comes on the show to talk about their individual addictions, how it affected their finances, and what it really took for them to turn it around. Plus, the conversations they now have that their son is in the picture. Before we start, I want you to know that there are no cut and dry answers when it comes to money management. That's why it's important for you to dial in on your values and use that as your guide. I have a free values-based spending guide that walks you through some juicy questions and how you can start using them to allocate your money. To grab it, head over to beyondthedollar.co/values. All right, get ready, grab a seat, and let's go beyond the dollar. Brianne and Mark, welcome to the show. Let's start talking about your separate addictions. What were they? And then were you recovering by the time both of you met?
Okay. So I am a very grateful sex and love addict. I know that sounds crazy to even say. I'm about to get my 11-year chip coming up of sobriety in the program. It's an addiction where you're addicted to people and how we use people to make us feel better about ourselves. So my whole addiction, I always wanted like a white knight to come and save me, the prince to come and take me away and provide for me, even though I'm like a full-blown feminist, which makes no sense, that I have my own money, I make my own money. But in my addiction, I want to be like lavish and taken care of. Mark and I have been together almost 16 years now. So I didn't know I was a sex and love addict when we started dating 16 years ago. Our fourth year together, the shit hit the fan, if you really want to say. Mark created this television show for Sony Crackle. It was one of the first big web series. It's called The Bannon Way. And he got a big paycheck. He was the star of the show. He wrote it. And at that same time, when he was like at his highest at that moment, I was at my lowest, feeling everything like I just didn't want to be me anymore. So yeah, we weren't together when I started my journey with sex and love addiction and really hitting my knees. What about you?
So for me, I am 32 years sober of alcohol and drugs. I'm also coming up on 10 years of not incurring any unsecured debt through Debtors Anonymous. When Brianne and I first met, she said I was sober at that point, around 15 years. And I think in the first 4 years, it's so interesting. It's like there was definitely a sign of my inability to manage my money, to pay the bills on time, to support her. And there was always a part of me that wanted to be the guy that like saves the day. So there's a part of me that's codependent and sort of Al-Anon that wants to make sure that people are happy and that they like me and that they love me. So we were sort of a perfect fit in the beginning is that it was this idea that I was going to be the guy that was going to take care of her. Like within 3 months, she moved in to my apartment. And
I thought it was less than that.
It could have been less. It was March, so it was like a month and a half. We sort of talked about it will be cheaper if we both live together. She never paid for rent. We kind of talked about it. And then I just basically said, oh, well, I'll just take care of it. I'll keep paying the rent and the bills and everything that was already in my name. That led to 4 years later, you know, I was in a place where I was at the highest in my career and the lowest spiritually, especially in a financial sense, where I'd got this big paycheck. And yet every day I just looked at my bank account, just watched it go lower and lower and lower, and was unable to create more income to credit, which led me to sort of a bottom financially. And I found myself needing help. And a friend of mine in the AA program had mentioned Debtors Anonymous. And that's how I found Debtors Anonymous at that same time, around the same time, within, I think, 6 months of
Brianne. 6 months, yeah. We both entered new programs in 6 months, but there was a big turning point. Remember when you were at the film festival in Canada and you were like getting all these accolades? You should tell about that.
Well, yeah, that was sort of like the sort of that bottom for me was like I was up there in Canada receiving these awards for this project that I had created, and I had $35 in my account, and a bad check went through and that took the $35. And so I had nothing. Like I was up there in Canada for 5 days and I had no money whatsoever. And then Brianne called me to say, hey, our water shut off. And then an hour later, did you not pay the rent? There was like three things that all happened in one moment in time.
It's a great time.
Do I really need to look at this? And yes, the answer was yes, I did.
I am curious because I think just from interviewing so many people that addictions almost stem from behavior or something that was observed or learned growing up. So I'm really curious with both of you. I'm assuming you went through therapy or other than Debtors Anonymous and all those things. Like, what were some of the things that you both have discovered that may have contributed to some of these negative behaviors?
I never learned how to manage money. Like, my parents never taught me how to balance a checkbook. We had a lot of creditors calling our house. We would hide our cars away from the repo guy. So I feel like I didn't have life's lessons. I think that leaned into the addiction for me of like, someone's going to come and save me. Having a career in the arts and as an actor, you're always like, oh, if I just get that job, it will fix everything. I hoard money. Like I hoard it. Like I have so much in savings, but I act like I don't have any money. Like I'm always afraid. So I just keep hoarding more and more money. I went to a lot of therapy. I did for years. I went twice a week on top of going to a 12-step program, on top of working the steps with my sponsor. She told me this one specific thing one time that really helped me, that money, there's only value what we put on money, and money is just a piece of paper. It actually means nothing. And for it to actually work, it has to be fluid. It flows in and out of your life. I just always hoarded it because I was so scared to be in debt like my parents. I've pretty much only had one credit card and I pay it off every month. And the funny thing is when we were going to get a car, they were telling me I had bad credit and I started arguing with the sales guy and I was like, I have great credit. I don't owe money to anybody. I have all this money in my account. And he's like, no, you have no credit because you have to build credit. And I just never knew that.
For me, there was no sort of clear conversation about money. I felt like I had this weird sort of life where it was like up till 9, it was very secure with my parents were together and then they got divorced and then there was two separate households and they both handled money completely different. The first part was all of our friends in the neighborhood had more money. They had better houses. They had the better boat. They had the better cars. They had the better bikes. They had the better everything. And so there was always a sense for me that we never had the cool things. I look back at it now. I see how hard my dad worked to provide those things for us. Yet it was never enough for me. I always felt like whatever we had was not enough. And then my dad remarried and she was acting like they had $1 million. So everything was new boat, new car, new house, lots of stuff. And where my mom was like struggling and she didn't have the money. I didn't have any role models specifically to say, hey, this is how you save money. This is how you pay your bills. And then I always seeing with my dad and my stepmom that it was always like, oh, there it is. You know, here it is at the end of the month and we don't have any money. We got to wait for the paychecks to come. It was like celebration. Like the paycheck came, it was time to go shopping.
Thank you for sharing that. I think that's so common. That whole concept of like, if I have this, I'll be enough. Even if somebody isn't, let's say, in debt or anonymous, anything like that. So Brianne, I am interested, because I know Mark alluded to it a little bit, is how were your finances?
With our bills, I just expected him to pay for everything, even though I had all the money. So it was this weird, unrealistic expectations that I have to be taken care of. I think that really leads into sex and love addiction, the fantasy that you'll be taken care of and a person's going to rescue you. Because I was in so much fear of the end of the month not having the money, even though I did. It's this weird thing, like I lived in my own weird, distorted reality, would you say? Mm-hmm. I mean, right? Mm-hmm. That he'd be like, you have the money, why are you freaking out? And it's like, but what if the money's not there in 6 months? I was always future tripping and always in the past scared that, like my parents, they did the best they could, but we did live beyond our means. Also with my addiction, the whole money aspect, that I put this mask to the world that I had no problems and I was perfect. So on the outside, I looked put together and it looks like I have a lot of money. But then, like I said, our cars were being hidden in the garage from the repo guy. I've carried that on, like wearing the mask of I have no problems, I have it all together, when I'm just a basket case like everybody else.
Yeah, thank you. I think you guys mentioned, I just want to ask again, is when did you both finally seek help for your individual addictions?
I did first during that year. It was 2009. I entered sex and love addiction. That first year of my withdrawal was really brutal on our relationship. I cried every day for a year. I got rid of all my guy friends. I didn't flirt, text, even talk to any other guys, even when it felt nothing. When I would go to a restaurant, I wouldn't even look a waiter in the eye. So it was really intense for me that first year of sobriety. We were even willing to break up if it was for me to get healthy and to start learning how to self-love. Because a lot of people think sex and love addiction is really sexy and it's like cool, but it's not cool to be addicted to people and use them to fulfill you. And I just realized everybody in my life, my family, my friends, Mark, my career, everything I was using to make me feel better inside instead of looking at myself. And then Mark shortly after.
Yeah. So for me, I got sober when I was 19. So in 89. And then in 2010, I started Debtors Anonymous.
Were you still together? I know you guys said you were going to talk about breaking up, but were you still together while you were going through this?
Yes. We never broke up. Halloween 10 years ago, we spent one night apart specifically because we just were not getting along because we were both in our addiction.
We were both so, when you're especially starting in a program, 12-step program, when you're letting go of things that you use to fill yourself, whether it's shopping, you know, whether it's eating all the time or alcohol, drugs, people, you know, social media, all that stuff. When you get rid of it, you go through this physical withdrawal and it is brutal because you're taking away that thing that you cover your feelings up with. So that first year was really difficult for us because we were both so raw and vulnerable.
I just remember it was actually 11 years. It was before you went into the program. It was a month before. It was like a month and a few days before. That was sort of bottom for both of us of just like, wow, this is just not working. Like something needs to change.
Brianne, you went to the Sex and Love Addiction Anonymous, I think that's called. And then Mark was Debtors Anonymous. What were some of the things that were coming up that were really, really challenging? Like things that you discovered, you're like, I was avoiding this for a very long time. Now it's coming up and I got to face it.
I think the main thing that comes up is that you realize how much you hate yourself internally. I think every addiction, there's this self-loathing, this fear of abandonment, fear of being alone, no one loving you. So I think that really hit me. Like I always thought I was a very confident woman, but when I got down to it, it was all ego and narcissism. And that underneath, I was just a scared little girl, afraid of loving, afraid of fully committing to somebody, and that they'd find out who I really am and not like me. So my whole thing when I started working on myself is that if I love you, it's hard for me to be intimate with you because connecting those two things, it was too vulnerable and too raw for me. So the whole thing through the program is finding myself and then being able to be fully committed to another person, but without them fixing me, that I always have to fix myself and that I don't need anybody, that I want somebody in my life.
It's so funny. There's a part of me that wants to like skip forward and get to something that you might be asking later. So I don't want to, but there's a part of me that sort of, when Brianne's talking about that, as we are peeling away the onion and learning more about ourselves, you know, some of the things that were most difficult in terms of you and your money mm-hmm. and your thing was how it affected me was that there's a part of you that was 1 foot in and 1 foot out
yes.
of the relationship because you were afraid of that commitment.
Yes.
And the money had a big part of that. You knew that that money was in your account, that if we ever broke up, you were taken care of. Like
yeah.
you didn't have to worry about that. And I felt that. I felt that she had 1 foot in, 1 foot out because there was never that sort of trust in that. Matter of fact,
you didn't even know it was in my account.
No, and not until literally 3 weeks before our wedding, which was five and a half years ago. Said, and we've been together 15, she said, so I guess you should probably know how much money I have in the bank. And I was like, that would probably be good because it's really technically my money too after we get married.
Especially in the state of California.
You know? And so there was a big part of that we realized we were both afraid of that intimacy with the money, intimacy with ourselves and having that commitment to that. I felt like there was definitely some of the darker things that came up afterwards were just my limiting beliefs about what I was capable of, even though I had this sort of dream and fantasy of the life that I wanted, you know, I wanted to have this life, a house on the hills and up the sunset and drive down in my Range Rover and see myself on a billboard and on my flying across to Paris for vacation. But I didn't really do the work on a daily basis to achieve that because I'd sabotage it on the way. These patterns that I had that I'd overspend or I'd under-earn, I'd work way too hard for no money and commit way too much time on things that weren't going to bring me any success or move my career forward. On the bottom of all that was just, as Brianne was saying, is like that I'm not enough. That no matter how hard I work, I'm never going to get what I want. I'm never going to achieve the success that I want. Now, on the other side of that, to say, even with the success, even with the money mm-hmm. to realize, oh,
even
right.
with the Range Rover.
Yeah. Even though that does not matter.
Like, it doesn't matter.
Having all those things doesn't make you better. It doesn't make you feel better. Like it has to come from the inside. We've been constantly saying this, like we have to be okay getting what we want and we have to be okay not getting what we want. A lot of times we are constantly struggling with that, like finding that balance with we're okay just like this.
I do have to say the one thing that we realized being together for 16 years, finally, he's on my accounts. He's on my business accounts, which just happened. What was that, like 5 months ago, mm-hmm. maybe?
It takes a pandemic.
But it took that long also because right now our whole life is about creating and our art and putting our sobriety out there and helping other people and doing the podcast together, Secret Life Podcast. It's helped us really open up to each other and see what's important in life and that he can't fix me and I can't fix him. We can only fix each other and we're there to support each other. I want to be a better person for him because I love and adore him and respect him.
I feel the same way.
And I appreciate this openness and I'll definitely leave a link in the show notes for everyone to listen to your awesome podcast. I love the insights with the 1 foot in, 1 foot out with the savings account because that was something I was curious about. And what I'm even more curious about is, can you pinpoint a period of time where both of you finally were like, okay, we need to get a lot more honest about what's going on with our individual finances and then how it's going to work together?
Mark is definitely the one that led. Been steps though, people. Okay, you're listening. Like, this has been a process of at least 5-6 years, like before the wedding. So you could talk about those steps because you led it more than me.
I definitely feel like it's been a good 10 years that we've, for both of us as a partnership and also for myself. I mean, really, the way that the program works is they really start with having clarity on your numbers. One of our tools is to keep track of everything we spend, every money, any penny that goes out and any penny that comes in. But having that clarity was important for me to realize, oh, wow, I'm not making enough every month to support what I spend. Oh, I got to get more work. I got to create more things. Obviously, I can always spend less. The program doesn't want you to sort of lean into making your life smaller. It's more about leaning into making it bigger. And so there are times we're like, okay, the house is on fire. We actually have to stop spending. Let's cut our budget. The thing that was always hard for me was budgeting. The program, actually, we don't use those words budgeting. We call it spending plan. It's a different way of looking at it. because the budget always felt like restraining. And I was like, oh, you can't tell me what to spend. I can't this budget things. So the clarity on how much I was spending every month, how much I was earning. And there's these things called pressure relief group where you have two people that sit with you and they go over your numbers and they go over what your vision is for your life and what are the actions that you're taking for every 3 months, 6 months kind of thing. And the thing that kept coming up was, so wait, you live with your girlfriend and you pay for everything? Do you ever have a conversation about this? I'm like, well, we tried, but she sort of, you know, and then years would go by and it was like, now she's going to be my fiance. And then it's now she's my wife, you know, and all of those steps. And each time we were getting closer and closer, each time we were being more clear about how much money we had for both of us. And then we would start to, I would say probably around 5 years ago, when we moved to this house, that we were very specific prior to that of like, okay, these are our shared expenses. These are our individual expenses. And how do we move forward? And Brianne fought it.
Yes, I did. I'm not going to lie. Like, it took me like every time he would have one of those meetings where he looked at his numbers, he's like, just so you know, these are my numbers. A part of him's like, do you know what you spend? But he didn't say that. And I would be like, in the back of my mind going, oh my God, I probably should know how much I spend, even though I'm good at budgeting.
Yeah. And so we found that we're like, well, these are the things that we want to do. And then what was really great was there were, because obviously there's times where Brianne's career was soaring and mine was lukewarm. And then there are times where I've been soaring and hers been lukewarm. And so having that balance so that we can say, okay, wait, I need some support here. Like, you're shooting a series in Vancouver. Is there any way that we can figure out how to split this up better so that I'm not stressing every month to try to get this, you know? And that was a huge step for me to be able to say, I need some support that way.
Yeah. And then me being an adult, and I think it was like, it's time to adult up. Like, you are not a little girl. You are a woman. This is your partner for life. Technically, in the state of California, he has 50% of what you make anyways, because we didn't have a prenup. So it would go to him anyway. You need to adult up and look at where you're not being a full partner. That was a big step for me and my personal work of, is it fair to him for it all to be on his shoulders when I'm making a boatload of money? And it was like, my reality check was like, no, you're being selfish, you're being self-seeking, and you're withholding. I realized me withholding love was withholding the money or the access to money. I think it was that whole process. And then if he has a great couple of months, he leans in to be like, I'll take care of this stuff. So it's really a balancing act, especially as an artist, because we don't know who's going to be busy.
Did you both have joint accounts closer to getting married, or like, when did that happen?
Literally just 3 months ago, she put me on her account. So we technically have a joint account through that. Even started to like, even just thinking just the practicality of it. It's like, okay, so move everything to this account. We put all the money here. This is what our monthly thing and goes in here. It just became like, if we need to do that, we can. Right now, I can pay out of my account. You pay out of your account. I have access to yours. You have access to mine. But there's, well, you don't technically have access to
mine. No, because we haven't done that yet.
Right.
Remember?
And I never will. I'm going to keep that all for myself. But no, but that's what we need to do. And actually, we were going to do it, but our bank has been closed right here since March. But it's just been something more out of, I think, convenience and habit that it just, okay, this works this way.
Yeah. And that makes sense. And I think ultimately, whatever works, and as long as both of you are talking about what's going on, I think that's the most important thing. I know there are a lot of people that get really caught up in like, I need to have a joint account for this. It's like, that's almost secondary to what the main thing should be, is talking to your partner about money in the first place.
It's funny. I felt like for a while too, I was getting stuck in that idea that like, oh, we are supposed to have a joint account. That's how it has to happen. And I think that's what she pushed back on. And I think because of her past, of like her parents and her dad who did not work at all and her mom worked, there was this thing of like,
am I going to take care of you?
Yeah. Like, what was that? You know, that, what's that? You need to be just sitting on the couch playing video games while I'm working. And
plus, he doesn't play video games. Yeah, exactly. We don't have any video games. Yeah. But I just have to.
And I rarely sit on the couch like that. But that's like in her mind how it looks. And for me, it looks like we're partners. My money's your money. Your money's my money. And we realize that's an idea that doesn't necessarily fit, and it doesn't have to fit. I talk to a lot of my friends and they don't. And even if they did have joint accounts, they're like, well, that's just for our house stuff and our cars, but we have our individual accounts. And I don't think there's any specific, apparently, there's no rules. So that's good.
But I would advise anybody listening that you should probably know what's in each other's accounts before you get married.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Probably a good idea. Yes. I'm curious because I know you mentioned you have a toddler now. So I would like to know, how has money changed since he was born? And what are you hoping to do differently with him growing up?
Since he's been born, that's when it's opened up even more for us, where we discuss money all the time. It used to be a subject we didn't want to discuss, get irritated and walk away. Mostly I would walk away because I'm like, whatever. But I think having a child, it really, first of all, for our child, we want a loving environment. We do not argue in front of him. We do not argue about money. I think that happened a lot in both of our childhoods. We're united front. We already give him allowance. He helps clean the house. He's 2.5. And on Sundays, he helps me vacuum. He helps Mark clean the bathroom. And then we give him a dollar or some quarters and change, and we put it in his piggy bank. And he knows the value of money. So we're trying to really teach him that it's like, I don't want him to be a hoarder of money like me, but I also don't want him to think he has to work really hard and he'll never make enough money. So we're trying to build his self-worth and him being self-reliant and doing the dishes and the laundry and all that is really important to us.
I think leading up to him being born, we were definitely thinking more about money. We're like, oh, geez, we're going to have to, as you're spending money to buy everything that you need to prepare yourself for this human being to come into your life. You realize how expensive that is. And it's very clear that you need to know how much money. And that was a big benefit to us, is like, even when we were getting married, we had a spreadsheet and a budget. And we said, this is what it's going to be. And we knew what we were doing. I think in a way was a great in. And I think out of that is when Brianne's like, I guess I should tell you how much money that I have. And because we were so clear on what those numbers were going to be. And the same thing with him coming, we knew we had a spreadsheet. We knew what we were buying, how it was costing. Okay, this was going to be our bottom line that we wanted to spend. We asked other people what they bought and how much did they spend and things like that. And so we were very clear. And I think once he came, it was like, oh, we have another human being that we have to pay for. He needs diapers. He needs food. And this stuff is expensive. And the more that we realized how much money we needed, we were talking about it more. It didn't become like we throw money at it. It was like, no. We know how much money. We know what's going on. Oh, the daycare is this. The sitter is this. My nanny's this. This is what a night nurse is. This is what all these things. We're like, oh, wow, we got to figure this out. I think that's really helped us to be this joined forces that we're going to do this together. You know?
Yeah. And I think not living out of your means helps, that it also opens up, like, we expanded our life. So everything just kind of expanded with it, because there was honesty, there's integrity, there was trust between us. There was an open communication, which I feel like we've never completely had until now. And I think there's also a willingness to be wrong, and it's okay. If we do trigger each other with money or other things that come up, we have the conversation, like, what you just said reminded me of blah, blah from my past, or my mom used to say that to my dad. And it was these open communications that really made it possible for us to be life partners, I feel.
Right. And I'll just want to add one more thing, that there was a moment last year around, I think it was March or April, where we had the conversation like, okay, well, we know how much money we need a month in order to raise this child. And work is not coming. So we were figuring out what other ways could we earn. Brianne was working. I was not. I needed to come up with some things like, maybe I need to get a full-time job. Maybe I need to get something outside of my vision and do something different. I don't think we would have had that conversation had we not had the child. Yeah. Without him, we wouldn't have had that conversation. Out of that, though, that was when I'm peeling away the onion. I was like, oh, wow, there's a part of me that still isn't putting myself out in the world like the person I want to be. Like, I'm not putting myself out there. I'm not risking. I'm not writing that script and putting it out there. I'm not directing that thing and putting it out there. I'm not getting those jobs because I'm not being seen that way. It was a shift for me to say, like, oh, this is who I am. I am this guy. I know it inside, but I'm not telling people enough, or I'm not owning it, or I'm not putting myself in a position for somebody to fail enough. So over the summer was like the darkest place that I went through of like just really finding that place. I think it was September of last year where this just exploded of opportunities that I normally wouldn't have gotten. And I probably would have been too scared to say yes to because they were outside of my comfort zone. But because I kept putting myself out there, these people were responding, and I was like, oh, shit.
Now you have to step into it.
Now I have to step into it. And so this year has been, I mean,
amazing.
This full year from September of last year has been, even through this, it's a really horrible time for so many people, has been financially still the biggest I've ever had in my life. And I think that's because I'm willing to just really put myself out there and try for the things that I want rather than take something that's smaller because it's too scary.
It's more comfortable.
Yeah, more comfortable.
Yeah, I think it's our willingness now to be uncomfortable.
Yeah, definitely.
I think even for me, I wrote an article for HuffPost about my addiction and being in Hollywood. Our willingness to be uncomfortable and to fail, yeah. I think, is what is really helping us connect our finances and being a team.
The amount of self-awareness that both of you have now and probably will continue to have, it just also sounds like having your son, it's almost like a catalyst for all of the things that are happening now. Like everything built up to it, but that event was like, okay, now we got to even step up even more, which is exciting to see and hopefully bigger and better things to come for you both. Brian and Mark, thank you so much for coming on Beyond the Dollar.
Thanks for having us.
This is great.
You can find Mark and Brianne at their podcast at Secret Life Podcast. So you can find that wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also find Mark Gant at markgant.com and Brianne at briannedavis.com. Coming up next, I'm going to distill my conversation with Mark and Brianne, including how you can deal with your partner's money baggage. Hey everyone, I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Mark and Brianne. Just so grateful that they came on together to talk very openly about their individual challenges and then what happened coming together. So as I'm sure you can tell from that conversation, it's super easy to tell, right? Or to even see how baggage, individual baggage can affect your relationship. Now, yours may not be as extreme as Mark and Brianne's marriage, but growing up, maybe you and your partner may have different views and values on money. So those lessons that you've learned and even trauma or whatever that you've experienced growing up can really affect the way you both deal with money and other things in your marriage. And so what was really great about Mark and Brianne's conversation was that they now both have the self-awareness not to pass on some of these negative behaviors or beliefs onto their child, right? So as you could tell, their son is now 2.5 years old. He does some work around the house, right? Age appropriate stuff, of course. And then he learns the value of money. So really, I guess the biggest lesson is to work on your own shit. Anyways, joking aside, it's really about changes from the inside. And so with Brianne's love addiction and Mark's alcohol addiction and, you know, going through Debtor Anonymous, it's really, I mean, what's so great is that they learned that change really came from the inside. And so you may not have these similar types of addictions, but maybe you do tend to overspend or whatever it can be. It's really crucial to look on the inside. And it's hard, right? Both of them, it took good 10 years of talking about their relationship, going through their individual stuff and talking about money, right? And even then, after they were married and when their child was born, they continued to have these conversations for them to really get on the same page. And so what that really means is be patient and compassionate with yourself and with your partner, especially if you're trying to make these huge changes in your life. And so if you're the one who is really interested in making change, you're not quite sure if your partner is, it's okay to start initiating those conversations. So as you heard from my conversation with Mark, right, he was one who really initiated it. Brianne was kind of fighting about it, but then ultimately they both did get on the same page. And what was really powerful, and I'm going to just say this again, when Brianne said it, was she realized that her withholding love was withholding access to money, or even vice versa. So think about that. Think about how your behavior or your attitude towards money may be a hindrance in your relationship or may cause challenges in your relationship, whether that's a romantic partnership, whether that's friendship, or even between a parent and a child, all right? Last bits is more practical is I really liked how Mark talked about making a budget, a spending plan, or having it feel less restrictive. And so what that really boils down to is to figure out what works for you. And on that same vein, right, my husband and I have joint bank accounts, but Mark and Brianne didn't. or they don't, and that's okay, right? They are still openly talking about money, and they're still openly talking about all the things that is affecting their lives, right? In their partnership. So don't worry about the specific how-tos per se in terms of like accounts and all those things. But what's really, really important is the core or the basic foundations of a relationship, which is open and honest communication. All right. So I hope you enjoyed that episode. If you really, really liked it or any of the other episodes you've heard, please share with a friend. It will really help spread the mission of what we're doing around here, which is to have more deep and honest conversations about how money affects your well-being. Now, next week is the last episode of this season, and it is a special one. There are multiple stories coming in. The format's going to be a little bit different. I'm not going to tell you what the topic is, but it is one that will probably be quite appropriate for the new year or even when you want to make a change. All right. So again, thank you everyone for listening to Beyond the Dollar. And until next time, keep living beyond the dollar.